You're listening to Juno Afternoon. I'm your host, Shelley Delaney, and as more organizations in Juno look at developing native land acknowledgments, Sea Alaska Heritage Institute gets more requests for help. Welcome to my first guest today, SHI's Education Program Manager, David Shakely Early. Hello.
Hello.
Wasa'iati. Thank you so much for being here today. Gunas Chish. Let's just start with an introduction. Would you please introduce yourself to our listeners?
Sure. Shinket Kainach Yesh Yedi, you Khatuasau, Yesh Nachatsati, Takhtin Tan, Ka Irish, Ka French, Khatsati, Tahita, Huna, Kawudach, Shangu Kedi Yedi. And I am from the, my name is David Shakely Early, David Shakely Early, and I'm with the Sea Alaska Heritage Institute as the one of the education project managers. And I gave you my name in Tlingit, Yesh Yedi, and from the Duck Dainton and the Sea Pigeon from Huna is where my background from Tlingit side comes from, basically. Yeah. Goodness geez.
Welcome to the show. It's great to have you here. We're going to be talking about land acknowledgements, and I have a lot of questions. But before we get into any of that, I would just like to open it up for you to share your thoughts on land acknowledgements, just based on your experience and your background.
Sure. Yeah. Well, first of all, we at Sea Alaska Heritage Institute are really pleased and excited that there's a movement to develop and to recognize Indigenous peoples' homelands and to acknowledge that they are living and working on these lands. And so we know from great certainty with our oral traditions and our scientific evidence to kind of back that up, that Indigenous peoples have lived here in Southeast Alaska for 10,000s of years, at least. And, Tlingit, Haida, and Tsimshian have lived in these areas. Land acknowledgement, I guess, is I see it, it's kind of in some way been more of a, a trend almost, you could say, that there's been a lot more that have been coming up. And I think it's a good place to start. It is a really good place to start. And I don't think that it should stop there. And it should just be, here's your land acknowledgement, and then we're done. It's the first step. And that first step really leads to the future. And it leads to, looking at the past as well. And it's just, kind of the tip of the iceberg that really is there. And, things like land acknowledgements are a great way to kind of open up that conversation, open up that thinking, and to invite others to connect and explore and learn about why there's even a land acknowledgement or why there is such a thing. And maybe there's some other things that they're not sure about that they'd like to explore. Yeah.
Is land acknowledgement about honoring the land itself? Is it about Indigenous peoples who lived on the land in the past? Or is it about Indigenous peoples currently living here today who have always belonged here?
Well, land acknowledgements, I would say, are definitely part of all the past, present, and future. It's really what it should be, I guess. And if you look at some land acknowledgements or hear some land acknowledgements, they're not all the same. And, some individuals or institutions, organizations that come up with land acknowledgements may not have that same idea of what a land acknowledgement is, or the same research or same background or same knowledge to put into a land acknowledgement. But that said, one should, I think, really put in what has happened in the past, what's happening today, and then what can be what's happening and to look into the future. So it really brings all of those things together. A true land acknowledgement should do that anyway.
Are there times that we should lean towards one or the other, acknowledging the land or acknowledging the people?
It's a really tough thing to say. So if you really think about the Tlingit people, for instance, the Tlingit people, we are so connected to the land. And it's really hard to differentiate that. So, I mean, we think of the land, we look to the land, it's our ancestors that are in the land. It's just not the physical dirt and soil and rocks. It's our ancestors that are from this land, are in this land, the blood of them are in this land. We live off of the land, we live off of the sea, and it's part of the culture. It builds the culture, it creates culture, it supports the culture. It also builds and stems and supports the language as well. So the Tlingit language is developed, around the environment and around the land and the sea and the people and, histories and things like this. So, really when you're doing, in a way, really when you're doing a land acknowledgement, I would think of it more than just land, because it's really, like I said, hard to take those things apart. In Tlingit, Tundutani, Tlingit way of thinking, think of way of understanding these things. It's all interconnected, and it would be kind of hard to do to just look at one or the other in a way, really.
Yeah. Okay. See, Alaska Heritage has seen an increase in calls about land acknowledgments. What do you think the reason or reasons are for that?
Well, I think that, it has been more of kind of a trend, I guess, like I said, or it's been more on the uprise, which is a great thing. And it's doing one thing that is bringing the message out there to others to be aware of these situations and the past and the history. And, individuals and organizations are realizing that, we should be involved in this. We should know this history and culture of this place that we're in, and we should do something about it. And so it's definitely been more important, or not more important, I guess is the wrong word, but more, at the forefront, I guess, of people's discussions, when they start meetings, when they start events and things like this. And, that audience that's the perfect time to do it, at these bigger events, because when you are doing these land acknowledgements at these larger events, that's the pool of people that hear this, put up a question mark and say, I wonder why we're doing that. I wonder why they did that. I wonder what the reason is for. And so it brings up these questions if they don't know already. And that leads them down a road of kind of a self-discovery of looking at themselves, looking at the organization, and asking those questions for themselves to see if it's something important that they would like to incorporate into their everyday cultures that they have. So I think that's definitely one of the reasons it's been out there. So in a way, it's working. I mean, it's raising those questions, and it's being brought forward.
You mentioned groups, organizations using land acknowledgments at the start of large events. Are these the folks that are coming to you for help, and what kind of help are they asking you for?
Well, there are some misconceptions too, I would say. So there are definitely some organizations, that come to us. There's groups like tourist organizations that, feel like it's a good thing that they want to incorporate into their things that they do for tourists and everyday operations. Other organizations, come to us for advice. And really that's a great, another great thing that's happening, because, land acknowledgements also should connect the individual or the organizations to the native entities in that community, in that town, place-based, and really have that connection. And without that connection, without that research, without that homework that's done from that organization or individual, you know, there's a gap, and there is going to be a gap. So it should be up to the organization and individual to do that background and research so that they know who exactly they're acknowledging and why they're acknowledging and you know, those sorts of things. And it's a little bit different than just kind of having a cookie cutter land acknowledgement that just gets said and copied and copied and copied. I mean, there should be something in it that really goes behind it. And not only that, but, you know, having them take it further to the next step, to what's next after this land acknowledgement, then what do we do now? I mean, what is the hope that are we hoping to really get out of this, and what are we trying to achieve? So those are definitely other things that come up that I think, you know, organizations and individuals come to us asking. And the other thing I was going to mention for some, you know, confusion at times is I work with a program called Through the Cultural Lens, which is an orientation, cultural orientation for educators. And we work with we've done it in the past 7 years with Juneau educators. We expand it down to Southeast Alaska and to a number of regions. But I've had conversations with teachers in the schools that they asked me, you know, what is a land acknowledgement? And I didn't, you know, can I even do it? Can I as a teacher give one at school, at an assembly, at a whatever, you know, because they're not native, you know? So can a non-native teacher or an individual give a land acknowledgement? Or, you know, they're coming to me and saying, gosh, I didn't even think that I could even do that. You know, so there's a little bit of you know, potential confusion around that, or misconception that, you know, if you're not native, then you don't have the right to give a land acknowledgement. But it's not really that. I mean, it's you definitely are able to. And you know, individuals and organizations come to us with that same idea sometimes, as like, gosh, can I even give one? I mean, we're not a native organization. We're not a native individual. Are we allowed to even give a land acknowledgement? And you know, how do we do it? Who is it that we need to bring into this so that we don't offend others, or, you know, that sort of thing.
When someone, an individual or representation of an, or a representative of an organization comes to you and asks you for help, like, where do you even begin to respond to that? And do you feel it's the role of your organization to respond to these requests?
Well, it's a group. There's a lot of organizations, you know, in Juneau that help with these, I'm sure, you know, like Tlingit and Haida, Gold Belt, Sea Alaska Heritage, and you know, others that are approached for these types of things. And, you know, I think it is appropriate for, you know, groups and individuals to look to, you know, like, for instance, Sea Alaska Heritage for advice and for connections, even if we just help them to discover and think of why they're doing it in the first place, help them figure out what's the reason. And if it's just to if it's just because they want to do it because other organizations are doing it and that's it, and they feel like they kind of have to get on the bandwagon of doing it, then that might not be the right reason. You know, mm-hmm. It's really looking at the connections that they may be looking to make or may be hoping to make with Native individuals, Native organizations, you know, Native leaders and things like that they want to foster or should be fostering. So I think it's a good place to start to connect with places like Sea Alaska Heritage and others.
So along those same lines, non-Indigenous people and organizations, as you said, might have a lot of reasons why they're beginning land acknowledgements. And it's important to go through the process of identifying their motivations. Have you been a part of that process? How have you seen it play out, and how does that impact the outcome?
I have been in some cases, yes, a part of that, and I think it's very different. So it's very different from person to person or place to place. Some places just are looking for, or some individuals or organizations or companies are just looking for, you know, give me the cookie cutter. What's the cookie cutter thing? I don't want to do it wrong, so just tell me what to say. I don't want to, I don't know where to start, so just, you know, show me something, give me something here, you know, and I'll just say that. And you know, that's not always the best approach, really, like I said. So it's really, it's almost like if, you know, when we sing Happy Birthday, you know, it's a song that everybody knows and everybody sings on a regular basis. And it almost just comes out of your mouth without even thinking. You can say it and see it without even knowing it. It's ingrained into our brains so much. We can just say happy birthday, do happy birthday, blah, 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 and at the end, right? And that's it. But if and that can be like a cookie cutter model if somebody just says that all the time. But would it be more meaningful if, you know, for instance, like if it was your birthday, where were you born at? Let's say, for instance,
Southern Indiana.
Okay, so Indiana, and then let's see, so. What is your parents' names?
Brad and Jenny.
Brad?
And Jenny.
Brad and Jenny. Okay. Mm-hmm. And then so I mean, this is, I don't know what I'm, but you know, instead of just saying happy birthday, so it'd be like, you know, happy birthday, Shelly. Your parents, Brad and Jenny, raised you. And you were born in Indiana, or, you know, I mean, it's like, and you know, and then something maybe that you're like, you love, or that you're, that means something to you as well, might be thrown in there. I mean, it's a silly example, but what I'm saying is,
it's great. You know, it's a great example.
It's making it more specific to you. And it takes some time to do that. And the only way that you can do that is to sit down with Shelly and say, listen, and to know who Shelly is, and say, who are you? Where did you come from? What is your background? You know, maybe what are your goals? And add that into the birthday song. What are your hopes? What connects you? What grounds you? And those are important things that kind of go in to this new birthday song that somebody might be creating, instead of just a cookie cutter happy birthday, you know? So that's in a way of what it really should be. I mean, if an individual wants to connect and wants to create a land acknowledgement, they should be able to sit down and talk with the individuals that they're acknowledging that, you know, the purpose. They're making that acknowledgement too. So they need to connect to, or they really should connect with the people of that land, the individuals. Maybe there's, you know, individuals in the area that they can connect with that are the leaders, the spokesmen of the clan, and so forth, and really learn about them and take those things in to the land acknowledgement and make it more personal on that level. And it's really more meaningful, and really also the next steps. I mean, if I were to just say this to you, your happy birthday song to Shelly, and then that's it, and then I don't see you and talk to you until next year on your birthday, and then I sing it to you again, there's a lot of missed time there and a lot of missing opportunities where, you know, you can connect with the individual, connect with the Native organizations more than just getting a land acknowledgement, more than just talking and getting that information and say, okay, I got it. I'm going to broadcast it now, and I'm going to be on the land acknowledgement bandwagon. I mean, it's really an ongoing connection that should be fostered and created and maintained to really make it meaningful. And so that's part of what I think should be, you know, thought of in developing or thinking about what a land acknowledgement should be and how to come around it. That's a weird analogy, but it's something I just thought of, and I don't know.
I think you should write that one down. I wasn't looking forward to my birthday, but now I am, because everyone's going to sing me that song you just wrote. If you're just joining me, this is Juno Afternoon. I'm your host, Shelley Delaney. My guest today is David Shakely Early. So I don't have to tell you this, but many non-Indigenous people organizations may just be learning that the history of unceded occupation is not history. It's ongoing today. What would you say to individuals, organizations who are seeking how to reconcile their ongoing occupation of unceded lands and waters?
I think it goes back to making those connections and asking, and you know, what is it that I can do? What can I do to help as an individual or an organization? And there may be things that there's always things that can be done to help and to grow individuals and companies and you know, organizations further, to have a better understanding of why it happened in the first place and things that could help support the native organizations of that land or the native peoples of that land. I think you know, also just being involved, you know, being involved with things. I mean, for instance, there's organizations like the A&B and ANS and the Alaska Native Brotherhood and Alaska Native Sisterhood that, you know, in the name, it says Alaska Native Brotherhood, Alaska Native Sisterhood, but it's not just for Native people. Anybody can be a part of these organizations. So things like kind of stepping in and being aware and then sharing that knowledge and helping to educate others of those things is another big step. And that's a really big part of it. It's just education. And that's one thing that I think land acknowledgements are meant to do, or in it's hoped to do anyway, is to help educate others about these histories, about these ways that they may be able to help in the future and today, I think. So
many of us are working on self-education. What resources might be available to those who, you mentioned a few already, but those who are seeking to educate ourselves with guidance from the original people of this land?
Guidance, you mean to create a land acknowledgement, you mean,
or more, or even going beyond the land acknowledgement if you've already completed that step?
Yeah, I think, you know, some resources are places like Sea Alaska Heritage Institute, Gold Belt Heritage Foundation, Tlingit and Haida Central Council, or, you know, within their own town. So that's Juneau-centric, you know, but wherever you are, in whatever village you are in Southeast Alaska, there's a Native organization, there's a Native foundation that that has those connections, knows those connections, the people that you know, you want to connect with, the organizations want to connect with, to build these bridges and make these understandings with each other. You know, I mean, every village has one. So I think those are some of the best places to reach out to, you know, locally place-based and you know, connect there first.
Coming to the end of my long list of questions, David, thank you so much for all of these wonderful answers. I think that makes a lot of sense to look local first when you're looking to self-educate. What other actions might people take to support their Indigenous neighbors?
So within this, I mentioned earlier that, you know, the land and the culture and the language are connected. And, you know, we know of history of colonization and, you know, land being taken away and cultures trying to be stripped away and language being stripped away. These are things that have a lot of, you know, trauma for Alaska Native people and the generations and things like helping to know the language of the area, to learn it a little bit and to understand it and just try. And it's not always easy. I mean, you know, when people learn Tlingit, there's sounds and languages that are not in the English language. But if you show that you care, if you show that you're trying, you know, that's something that others can relate to. If you try to learn the culture and try to understand why and how they might fit in and see themselves, that's another great way. Another thing, like, you know, I said, like, join organizations like ANBANS, get involved with things so that they can figure out how to make a difference, and what to do to help the native peoples and the native organizations and the, you know, the native groups within their area. Absolutely. And there's always ways. There is always ways to do it. And you know, things like this is just the first step. I mean, it's really just like the first note of a song or a chorus. I mean, it's there to perk your ears up. If you hear a note, if you hear a phrase from a song, you know, these notes that come across, you know, dun 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 dun. It's just a few notes, but it's there to, like, bring you in, bring you in, bring you in. What else? What's next? What's going to come next? What do I do? And then you're building this symphony. You're building this music and notes and creating these verses that go on. That you know, the only way to do it is to make those deep connections. And things like this, like I said, is just the first step of making this symphony of welcoming and understanding and education.
Another great music analogy. Thank you so much for speaking with me today, David Shakely-Early, Sea Alaska Heritage Institute's Education Program Manager. David, is there anything else that you'd like to add for our listeners today? Anything maybe that I didn't ask you?
I would just say that starting somewhere is better than not trying at all. You know, and we have to try. Starting with good intentions and a good heart is what matters most. And if you come with that, if you come forward with that, with those ideas and those ideals of trying to make things better, to try to make a change, to you know, healing, that's the biggest thing. And to be, you know, sincere, really sincere, and think about, you know, looking in the mirror and asking yourself, why am I interested in doing this in the first place? And it might open some more questions. It might open some more areas for individuals to explore. And I encourage everybody to do that. It's not an easy thing to do. It's hard. It's very hard. It can be very hard. But it does make a difference. And it just takes the first step and the first note.
Mm. And time as well. I know that KTOO spent a long time on our land acknowledgement, and it continues to change and evolve. So,
yes.
Well, thank you again so much, Gunnar Schiess, for speaking with me today. Those were lovely answers. I really appreciate your time.
Gunnar Schiess.
Take care and have a great weekend.
Thank you. You too.
And special thanks to Chandra, KXLL's new music producer, for her help with some of my questions in that last interview and these jams.